Welcome to the DIY Pod, a people podcast for the music business, bringing you meaningful and motivating career conversations. I'm Sylvia Gargiulo, the founder of DIY People and Talent, the people consultancy for the music business. In each episode, we'll share with you lovely listeners real career stories from some of the most interesting, inspiring and insightful people I've met over the course of my career. Our guest on the pod today is the brilliant, the wonderful, the fabulous Karma Bertelsen, currently Marketing Strategy Director EMEA at global music distributor Fuga. Karma's also worked in marketing across live, labels and agency world, amongst other things. And we're so super grateful for her taking the time to speak with us today. Welcome to the DIY Pod, Karma.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm excited for our chat today. But before we get into your career story, before we get into your P's, before we get into your career story, we're going to warm you up with some quick fire questions. Are you ready?
I think so.
Yeah,
I've
don't overthink
it. I've been preparing myself.
Love it, love it. Okay, here we go. What was the first album that you bought?
It was called We Are Shampoo by a band called Shampoo.
Oh my God, did they do Trouble?
They did do Trouble.
I bought that single, love it. What was the first gig you went to?
It was Linkin Park.
Brilliant. And what's the last show you went to?
The last show I went to was, it was a cover band actually called Paramore GB. And they were playing at the New Cross Inn, which is a local grassroots venue close to where I live. Yeah, it was a really great show. I loved it.
Representing South East London. Love it. And what's on repeat at the moment?
There's a song called Purr by an artist called Slater. And yeah, it's just been on repeat every day at the moment, especially when I work out. It's just great.
Brilliant. And who's the artist that changed your life? Big question, that one. I'll just drop it in there. Who's the artist that changed your life?
It's such a big question. There's so many, but I think I'd have to pick Foo Fighters. They just, every album, I love every album. When they came into my life, the lyrics really spoke to me, which I know is a little bit of a cringy thing to say, but yeah, I just, the music moved me, the lyrics really spoke to me, and it just, yeah, really supported me through some of the best and worst times of my life.
Yeah, look, no shame, no cringe here. Like, everyone's favourite artist, favourite band. Like, there's, you know, Foo Fighters are great. I love it. And I'm a lyrics listener as well, definitely. So, fabulous. And what's your dream lineup, past or present? So if you're putting on a gig or a festival, who's on that lineup?
Oh my gosh, there's so many artists, and it would be a really weird festival, I think. So Taylor Swift, absolutely. Miley Cyrus, Peggy Goo, Lorde. I absolutely love The Weeknd, Queen with Freddie, ABBA, Fleetwood Mac, Stormzy. Oh my God, I love Hans Zimmer. He's always in my top artist that I listen to, my Spotify Wrapped. Foles, Bring Me the Horizon, because I'm seeing them tomorrow. Churches, Missy Elliott, loads. I don't think the festival would end.
No, I love it. I mean, that's at least 3 days right there. I love it. Brilliant, fantastic. Something for everybody as well. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Karma. Well, now we've warmed you up. So now, before we get stuck into your career story, when you kindly agreed to be on the show, I sent you a list of words to pick from, your P's in the pod. You picked proactivity, people and passion. Classic, a classic trio there. What was it about those words that made you pick them?
Well, I picked proactivity because I think it's just something that I've had to do in my career quite a lot. So I've had to take initiative. People weren't always around to hand me opportunities, and you know, I wasn't always owed them. So I really had to be proactive and take initiative to grab hold of those. There's also like always been challenges in my life. So as there is with anyone, I guess, just in life, in work, in career, and the ability to be proactive about like navigating my way through that has been really important and really key for me to kind of come out of those challenges in either a successful manner or having learned something from them. I feel like people who are proactive tend to thrive at work, and certainly for me, I've experienced more growth by being proactive at work. I've also been more satisfied with my career because I've been proactive in, you know, either taking steps or making my opinion known or putting out ideas out there, or, you know, being proactive in challenging ways that we do things. So yeah, that's why that one's important to me. Then people. So, I mean, people, I wouldn't be where I was in my career without the people around me or the people that I've met just in the music industry and outside of. It's really important for me to have like good connections with people. I think it's, again, been part of how I've got to where I am in my career. My, you know, some of my best friends are people that I met just working in the music industry. They're also, you know, some of my biggest supporters now, and they give me advice every day. You know, you're a, I guess, a classic example of why people are so important. I met you online or via the phone during the pandemic, and you've always been someone who, you know, I always think about you and how much you've helped me and how much you've helped the people that I've, you know, put in your direction, which I'm sorry about, it might have overwhelmed you at times. But yeah, I think that's why people are so important. I just, I wouldn't be here without people.
I'm smiling, I'm grinning like an idiot behind my mic. That is so sweet. Thank you so much, Karma. And, you know, I think just to turn that back to you, you know, you make it easy, and I think you are an incredibly, and going back to your first P, you're an incredibly proactive candidate. You mentioned challenges there, you're also resilient, and you know, I think those two things are incredibly important, and talking about the people that you've got around you, like I would echo everything you've said there. And not only am I incredibly grateful for your really, really very kind words, and also all the brilliant people you put in my direction, but I completely echo what you say about, you know, working in music can be amazing, because you really do meet some of your best friends, and it, you know, we all work quite long hours often, and we do meet people that we're working with, but then friendships grow out of that as well. And that's something that's, I think, pretty special about working in music. And we've all got that similar passion or that connection, which is our love of music. So thank you, that was very, very, really, really sweet and very appreciated. Thank you so much, Karma. And your final P is passion, so tell us why you picked that one.
Yeah, so this was, to be honest, I know that a lot of people have picked passion coming on this podcast, and I was a bit, I struggled with whether or not I'd put this in. I do think passion is really important, and certainly it's helped me in my career, but I feel like there is also a downside to passion, and I think there's like a balance that needs to be met when you are passionate about what you do. You know, over the years, my passion for music has been stronger at times than others, and when I've kind of felt myself having a lull in passion, I've gone out there and kind of sought out some information around, you know, whether I should even continue in music because I, you know, I feel no longer passionate in that moment. And I found loads of studies documented in various places like Forbes, Harvard Business Review, National Institute of Health, you know, the New York Times, loads of reputable sources covering the fact that feeling passionate about work can, you know, can be really rewarding. It can lead you to some really great things and some of the best work, but it can also come at a cost. So it can lead to exhaustion and, you know, at times burnout. And I really feel that my passion for music at times has led me down that path to burnout, because I've been so passionate about working long hours, or, you know, I've wanted to go to every show possible with all of the artists that I work with. And, you know, it's led to me, you know, going to work 9 to 5, 9 to 6, whatever, going to shows afterwards, not getting home until, you know, midnight, getting up again really early to get back to work. And that, you know, would be the full circle. That would be everything that I did. Like, no time for socializing with friends outside of music, no time for like doing things like exercise or myself. So yeah, I think it can definitely lead to burnout if it's not controlled. I think rather than encouraging just full-on passion in the music industry for myself and, you know, the people around me, I'd rather encourage like a sustainable way of having passion. So I don't want to encourage working late all the time. I don't want to encourage, you know, working on your holidays. I don't want to glamorize it. You know, I want to be, you know, encouraging people to take your lunch break, take time out of work, navigating their way through passion and challenges, you know, managing workload, monitoring emotional exhaustion, those sorts of things. I think it's good to be passionate, but yeah, have that sort of balance when it comes to it. And just being, you know, to go back to the first B, being proactive about managing your passion.
Do you know what? Again, always from you, Karma, absolute sense. Like, I love that. I love that you said that. Yeah, I think passion is a really, it's an interesting one. I speak to candidates regularly who have maybe been in the industry for a number of years, and they have really honest conversations with me. And sometimes people say, I think I might have lost my passion for music. And some of those candidates come out of music and some stay in. And I think the thing that more often than not it seems to be is that people are just burnt out. They're just tired. They've been working flat out for X amount of years. So they actually haven't lost their passion for music. They are just tired. They're burnt out. They've been, they're exhausted. So I completely, wholeheartedly agree with what you just said. I think it is about balance. It is about, you know, doing other things to give you some variation as well. Like, whether it's, like for me, exercise has become incredibly important for me in the last 12 months, I would say, which is not something that I ever used to do. So that way I've got something else that I can sort of invest myself in as well. And it could, like you say, it could be taking regular breaks, it could be taking holidays, it could be building healthy boundaries. And it's interesting that you talk about building a sustainable career. One of our other fabulous guests, Jeff Bell, who runs Partizan in the UK, he was talking about sustainable careers as well for a similar reason, actually. So I love that, Karma. You've smashed that one. And I love the fact that you've put a bit of a twist on it there. And it, I think it's really important. Just couldn't agree more with everything that you just said there. So thank you. Fabulous. Well, look, we're there now. We've done your P's. Shall we? And I'm sure we'll come back to the three P's that you picked because they are absolute classics. But shall we kick off your career story question? So I guess the most sensible place to start is, when and how did you come to realise you could actually work in music, or the business side of it really existed?
So when I was younger, I was playing guitar in a band in high school. And I think I realised that you could have a career in music when the practice facility that we would go and practice at a couple of days a week, one of the guys who worked there offered to book us some gigs and essentially offered to help us by managing us. And through getting to know him, I realised that that was actually something he got paid to do. He was, you know, very kindly helping us out for free because we were, you know, really young and just starting out, and he really wanted to help us, like, nurture our career in music. But before that, I hadn't really thought that you could work in music. I just thought that you just play in a band and, I don't know, things just happened. but yeah, I would say that was the first time I realised that actually there was loads of jobs that made and people behind the scenes that made all of my favorite artists get to the places that they were, you know, or work together with them to get on stages, to get on the radio, to, you know, get the CD in my hands.
And I think we, a lot of us have that, you know, unless we've got any insider information, which I certainly didn't have, and I don't think you did either by the sounds of what you just said. But yeah, I don't think we don't realise, do we? We do just look at the industry sometimes and think, oh, artists, great. We forget that there's loads of stuff that has to happen behind the scenes to get them where they are and on our screens and on our stages, etc., etc. So lovely, thank you for that one. And how did you get in then? What was your first step into the business side?
Well, so when I was in that band, my parents were constantly asking me what I wanted to do when I went to university, and essentially to pick a discipline or just to pick something so that I could go to university and not take the gap year that I wanted. I was watching TV one day. On the news came this music university, and actually it was a choir that had been put together by the university that were on the news. But I went and looked up the university, and it turned out that they had courses and degrees in, you know, performance degrees, guitar degrees, like all sorts of degrees, and within that was music business. And that was, you know, that was the subject that really called out to me. Though I was playing in a band, I didn't really enjoy playing live. I got really nervous. I didn't have any like stage presence or charisma. I actually fell off stage on our first show. So I knew that.
Oh no! That's like in front of everyone, isn't it? Oh no, that's like the tripping over or the falling off stage. Karma, you did it, but you got back up. Please keep going. Love it.
I got back up. My parents have it on film. They videoed the whole thing. But yeah, so I wanted to do music business, and I told my parents, and they were a bit apprehensive, but I sent in an application, did a bunch of interviews, and got in. So I guess my career in music really started when I moved to the UK to go to ACM, Academy of Contemporary Music, which is in Guildford, and yeah, start their music business degree course. When I was on that course, I couldn't afford to really do things like work experience, and to be honest, I didn't really believe in doing work experience for free. Coming from like where I came from, I guess like, you know, in Europe there is work experience for free, but I guess there's like a different mindset and approach to it. I couldn't really afford to get up to London from Guildford and just in exchange for, you know, travel, like a little bit of travel and maybe some lunch. So one of my uni lecturers suggested that I try and apply for a job at HMV, because a lot of people who worked in the industry at that time had come up through working at HMV because they had a passion for music, obviously. And he felt like they might, you know, it might be a good way to connect with them, and that might be a good way to like sort of get my foot in the door. And he was absolutely correct. That was the way to get my foot in the door. I worked at HMV for 3 years. I learned an incredible amount about music consumers, and also just about like genres and different types of music. I definitely, you know, I spent half my wages on music, definitely every month on new music that I hadn't heard of. I just had access to everything. But after HMV, I ended up moving to London, and I got a job as a business manager for celebrities. So I was a junior business manager at a company, and it wasn't just artists, it was also actors and just, I guess, any type of celebrity. I realised that that sort of wasn't really my calling, although I learned a lot there, and we were working with artists like Khalees and Calvin Harris and Adam Wiles, Joel Zimmerman, who's Deadmau5. So while I learned a lot there, I kind of realized I wanted to kind of move elsewhere in the industry. So I then moved over to Music Week magazine, because I was like, what better way to discover what part of the industry I want to work in than going to the music magazine that covers it all? So I worked at Music Week for, wow, a couple of years, definitely. It was a really great job. It opened a lot of doors for me. I made so many connections. I met so many amazing, interesting people. I found so much interesting music that was being sent to us. Yeah, it was a really, really good place to work. I wasn't just working at the magazine, but I was also working on a few other music magazines. So I worked on another one called MI Pro, which is Music Instrument Professional, which is all about the music instrument manufacturing industry and music instrument retail industry. So I got to know how that side of things works, which I think in music you kind of forget, like, that is a really big part of the music industry. All of your, you know, your companies like Fender, Roland, your microphone companies, etc. And then I was also working on a pro audio magazine called Audio Media International. So I learned a lot about, yeah, the pro audio industry there, and it was really interesting for me. Lots of things about, like, studio equipment, producers, and that side of the business. Once I'd worked there for a few years, I realized, okay, I worked here for a while. I'm not really, you know, I didn't really feel like I was in the thick of it in the industry, and I really wanted to move further to the, I guess, what I perceive to be the center of the industry. So working a bit closer with artists. So I interviewed for a role at PPL, the licensing company. It was a role in marketing, and while I was at Music Week, I was working more in, like, the sales side. There was a bit of marketing involved in it, but I really knew that I wanted to showcase my creativity or exercise my creativity within the music industry, and marketing was something that always appealed to me. So I got this role at PPL, and it was really great. I got to work on so many different marketing campaigns on both sides of the business. So the side of the business that goes out there and tells companies, you know, that, well, in a nicer way, that shows companies that you need a license to be able to play music in your business, and what happens when you get a license, like how that money then goes back to the artist. So that was one side of marketing at PPL, and the other side was the member services side. So actually recruiting artists to sign up to PPL and, you know, collect monies through the organization. Did that for maybe a year. And then, where did I go after PPL? Oh, and then after PPL.
You've such a long and illustrious career. I love it. It's like, where did I go next? And I'll just, you know what, I'll jump in there. And I love this. I love, you know, again, the way your career has sort of panned out. I think sometimes people feel like, you know, you get the first job you get, or the second or the third, is the dream. And actually, often what it is it's a series of stepping stones getting you closer and closer to where you feel you want to be. And, you know, and the term stepping stone, I'm not meaning that in any way to diminish what each of, you know, those companies do in any way, shape or form. It's more like you get in, you do an amazing job, you do as well as you can, you learn as much as you can, but you then have some more relevant experience to get yourself to the next stage, which I think is displayed by the story you've told us so far. I think sometimes people are like, ooh, you know, I'll talk to candidates who are starting out and working in a record shop, they don't think is a relevant piece of experience. It's like, of course it's a relevant piece of a relevant piece of experience, because, you know, you're dealing with that final, you know, finished product in a physical format. You're going to be getting familiar with all the little numbers and all that kind of stuff that's on. You're going to be familiar with label copy and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's all of those things are kind of stepping stones that get us closer to where we want to be. And I think if you can remember that, if anyone's sort of starting out or even in the middle of their career that doesn't feel like they've reached the pinnacle of where they want to be, just to always remember that each experience you have is going to teach you something and help you get to the next step. Sorry, Karma, I interrupted you. So you were at PPL when I interrupted you.
No, thank you. Yeah, I think that is an important point to make. Like, my career hasn't been very linear. And in fact, when I moved from like Music Week and all of those magazines to PPL, I took a pay cut then, because my goal was, yes, move a little bit closer into the industry, but also I wanted to work in marketing, and I didn't really have the skill set. Like, I didn't have a marketing degree behind me. We did cover marketing for for one module at university, but you know, by no means was that like full-on experience. So I did take a pay cut to move over, but I felt like, you know, I kind of knew it would pay off at some point. And it did, to be honest. You know, once I was at PPL for a while, after about a year, a job opportunity presented itself as a marketing manager at a life promoter. And it was a pretty, it's a pretty big life promoter here in the UK. And I actually, I applied, I brought in, you know, to the interviews, I brought in so many examples of some of the marketing that I'd done. I even pulled together a, you know, like a fake marketing plan, I think. I just, before they even asked me to do any tasks, I just brought the task to them because I was like, no, I really want this job. Like, I'm not going to give them a reason to say no. And one thing that I want to, you know, I want to bring it back to the P's that we talked about earlier, in and people being one of the P's that I picked. So one of my friends, who's still a really good friend of mine till today, who I met through the music industry and through someone I worked with at Music Week, she actually knew one of the people that worked at this company, and sent them an email saying, someone I know in the industry, her name is Karma, she's applying for this role, she's really great, I only have good things to say about her. And just really bigged me up, which was so nice of her. And during my interview process, the person that was interviewing me brought it up and said, oh, so-and-so emailed us to let you know that, you know, they think that you're great. It was a really like glowing review. And I do think that that was part of the reason why they gave me the job in the end, because I had like essentially a character reference that they didn't, you know, they didn't have to ask for, by someone that they respected in the industry. And also I'd been really proactive, another P, in just bringing them, showcasing, I guess, how I would use the marketing skills that I'd learnt at their company.
Love that. And I think that's sort of, that's a really great, it exemplifies the, you know, I know it's been a long time since we've worked together in terms of you being a candidate and me looking for a role for you, but that just really exemplifies that proactivity that you showed me when you were a candidate back in the day, because you would always come to me having already thought in advance of, you know, what kind of things might the interviewer ask me, and what can I prepare, and how can I have another P, preparation, how can I be ready to kind of give my best and present myself, another P, so many P's, present myself in the most kind of favorable way. And it's interesting there that you mention almost like you say a character reference, a recommendation. And again, I think that's, you know, we talk about networks a lot in the music industry, and it's not like a clandestine thing. It's like just meeting people and working well with people, and they're going to want to help you, you know, so they're going to want, we like to, I think, you know, it's important that we all give each other, when we're through a door, we keep that door open, we don't shut it behind us, you know. So if that can be some kind words from someone to recommend someone in a process, of course it's gonna make a difference. If you'd gone in there and not been you, though, with all the preparation and the proactivity that you would have expressed, that recommendation alone would not have been enough to kind of get you the job. But I think it's the total package, isn't it? It's the preparation, it's the personal stuff that you can add to that, and also then your reputation that you've built, and the recommendations that people can give you are often very helpful to get something across the line, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was really, it was like a really big eye opener for me that all of that preparation I did, and also, you know, the connections I'd made, could lead to something like me getting at the time it was my dream job. I had, you know, really felt like I wanted to try working in live entertainment and working closer with artists, and, you know, that was definitely it. So yeah. So I ended up working in live for 4 years. It was great, but I decided that, you know, I wanted to maybe try something else again, still trying to find my calling in music. Really what I decided is I needed to get more experience. I couldn't just work on, you know, in the licensing side for a magazine publisher and in the live industry and really understand how everything works around an artist. So I decided I wanted to get label experience. I wanted to work on the recorded side of the business and you know, really work with an artist in that respect. That said, I left my job to go to another job in live, again, to take another sort of like stepping stone, I guess, closer to what the end goal was. And it was the wrong timing. Gosh, when did I leave? I think it was like February 2020. And I was meant to start work at the new job the first week that lockdown happened for another P, the pandemic.
Not a good P, that one. No.
So I was meant to start the new job during that first week of lockdown, and obviously it lasted a lot longer than we thought. The company that had offered me the job were really kind. They, you know, just said, look, let's not talk about, you know, not giving you the job or anything like this until the last possible moment. And I'm going to say for maybe like 3 months, they kept checking in with me and, you know, kept saying like, look, we still want you to start, but, you know, things are so up in the air. And then I guess like at the 3 month point, we just had an honest and open conversation. They were like, look, it's not looking good, especially for the live side of the industry, which took a really, really big hit. Which, you know, I know all sectors did and lots of industry did, but they said, look, you're owed 1 week's pay because you'd signed a contract and, you know, during your probation period you're allowed to leave at week's notice, etc. So they were like, let's give you 1 week's pay, and then if the role comes up again once the pandemic is over, it, you know, it's yours, let's have the conversation again. So I felt like they dealt with that in a really lovely way and were just, yeah, really great about it. During that time we call it fun employed, but I'm not sure how much fun I had. but I was, yeah, looking for other opportunities, and I can't remember what role it was, but there was a role with you that you'd advertised, and that's when we first spoke, when I'd applied for that role, and I think you emailed me back and you were like, let's set up a time for a call. I want to know a little bit more about your career history and your career ambitions. And yeah, that's when we, yeah, started to get to know each other.
And that was it. It was in the middle of the pandemic, wasn't it? And that I remember being sat at my dining table / desk at that time and just being, you know, really blown away by you as a candidate, because you were just so, you were ready to go. Like I didn't really have to talk you through anything. It was more you sort of did it yourself. You came as the finished article, and it was that's when we started talking. It's so funny, the pandemic was a weird time, wasn't it? But it was like you say, it was a difficult time for a lot of the industry. Live was hit massively, and as a recruiter it was obviously a difficult time because there were not many jobs about. But our candidates, not wanting to sound too worthy, but our candidates needed us. And actually that was the time when people needed to talk to, you know, myself and as Soph, as it was, or lovely Sophie Feeney, I'm sure many people remember, used to work with me. And our days were filled with talking to candidates who were looking for work. They'd either lost their job through the pandemic, or, you know, they'd been in an unfortunate position where they weren't working pre-pandemic, and then they were a bit stuck. So it was really important then, more than ever, to talk to candidates and to reassure people. I mean, we didn't know when it was going to be over either, but listen to people and talk to people and ensure they still, you know, we were still in touch and being supportive of candidates, even though, you know, well, especially because the market was so hard. But it's my little trip down pandemic memory lane. Karma, back over to you.
I actually think I wasn't a finished product when I got in touch with you and when we spoke. And I have to say, you know, I think Absolutely. It must have been so busy for recruiters because there were so few jobs and actually quite a few people who needed work. And I remember just feeling so touched and honored by the fact that you still took the time to have like a phone call with me. It wasn't just that you wanted to speak to me on email, like you would call me up and check in on me and check on how the job search was going. And honestly, that even though, you know, it was a struggle to find a role, those chats were so hopeful and you did guide me in that. I remember having a conversation that I kept getting feedback that my marketing skills weren't transferable from live to the recorded side. And I remember being frustrated at that because I was like, look, marketing's marketing. Like I know how to get to people. Like I know consumers, like I understand them. And we spoke about, and I think through our conversations, what became apparent is that I probably needed to go out there and find some experience on the recorded side before I got like a permanent role in it. So that's when I went in-house at a digital marketing agency. And actually, again, Sammy Andrews at Deviate Digital has been someone that's been like very kind, very supportive. I've learned so much from her, been a mentor. She gave me a role at her agency. And through that role, I got the experience that I needed on the recorded side. I was working on marketing campaigns for albums and, you know, music videos, etc. And, you know, she never questioned whether I could do it or not. She didn't question whether my skills were transferable or not. She just kind of believed that I could get on with it and get it done. And, you know, I did because I really thrive in environments like that. And that's when you came back to me with a job at a record label.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think in music, there are sometimes some people will recruit a role based or some people only look at experience. You know, that's the thing that they look at. And other people will look at, okay, well, they have this experience, but the qualities and attributes that this person displays are something that works well within our company or something that maybe you can't teach as easily. So I think it is quite interesting, you know, that point of someone giving you a chance. I think sometimes we get, and I'm putting this in inverted commas, lucky breaks. It kind of wasn't a lucky break that someone gave you that opportunity. It was a combination of you using the attributes that you have, that proactivity, that resilience, that desire to progress, and you know, you're great with building relationships. It was that combined with the skills that you had, and an opportunity came up. You know, I think again, it's just an example of you being proactive. You know, if I gave you the advice that, look, maybe some of, and we'll talk about this in a second, about how marketing in live potentially differs from marketing at a label or marketing at an agency. You didn't just sort of sit around and do nothing with that feedback. You were like, well, what's the next thing I can do to get me closer, which is kind of like a theme of what we've been talking about today. So amazing. Thank you, Karma. I'm gonna hand the mic back to you.
Thanks. Yeah, so you came to me with this opportunity at a label to be a head of marketing, and I would say that was my next dream job, and I was over the moon. And obviously you guided me through the interview process, and where, you know, you were really great up until the point that I was off the job. So yeah, I then started working in-house at a label, working with artists of all sizes, like massive arena artists, and also lots of developing artists. I, you know, really loved it. The label had so many talented people there, and I had a team that I was leading again. So previously at the job I had in live music, I was also leading a team there. So it was really, really nice to get to work closely with a team and really strategize together the direction that we wanted to go in. Then after working at a label, I had worked really closely with, you know, distribution partners and distribution companies and realized how important streaming was and that I wanted to get a further knowledge and understanding of streaming and maybe even potentially work on that side of the business. And so an opportunity came up at the place that I'm at the moment, so Fuga, who are a global music distributor. And I ended up taking the opportunity. It wasn't the role that I took didn't end up quite being the right role for me, but in taking that role, I managed to move over into the right role for me within the organization. And then, you know, since then I've had promotions back into a leadership position. And yeah, it was definitely another example of sometimes you have to do a few stepping stones to get to where you want to be. But yeah, that's where I'm at now. Really happy, love my role, not looking to move into another part of the music industry.
You mean I can't poach you for a job, Karma? This is not acceptable. No, I love that. That's brilliant. And I'm pleased you're at a place where you're happy, where you're developing, where you're growing, where you're doing amazing work. I'd love to know just the headlines of, because you've done marketing now in a number of areas, whether it's collection society, live label, distributor. Like, is there a difference in the marketing? Like, are there any kind of key differences? Like, and maybe even explaining, you know, just the headlines of what those areas are and potentially cover. Would that be okay?
I think there are differences. But I do think for the right proactive marketeer, it would be easy for you to adapt if you had the opportunities that I did to try out a number of different roles. I guess to start with, collection societies like PPL and PRS in the UK, there are equivalents in other territories around the world. The marketing there is, as I mentioned, that there's two different sides to it. You need to market to artists and the music industry because you want them to sign up to become essentially not really a client of the collection society, but an artist has to sign up for the collection society to be able to pay them out monies that they're owed. And then the other side of the business is, you know, for PPL, it was really reaching out to businesses to get a license. So if you're, you know, playing the radio in your business, you need to pay an additional license to be able to play music on a commercial premises. And that also goes for, you know, if you're a music venue and you're playing music before people go on stage, or, you know, just like a general venue, like you need a license to be able to do that. And then you also need a license for people performing at your venue, and that's more PRS. So understanding what you're marketing, I guess, is really important, and who you're marketing it to, and being able to, you know, split up the two, or split up however many different people you're marketing to. So just because you're working for one company doesn't mean there's one audience that you're going to market to. Within distribution, so I work purely on the marketing side of the business that caters to helping our clients market their artists' music. There is another side of our business, the B2B marketing side, which is the side that acquires new business and, you know, reaches out to the industry to get new business in, to get interest from, you know, clients and labels, etc. So to go into what a music distributor does, essentially what music distribution is it's the process of getting your songs available to stream or download on music stores and streaming platforms like Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, etc. We also do We touch on physical distribution as well. So it's a process of getting your music available in retail stores. And actually, when I started at Fuga, it's not something that we did. We've moved into it in my time there. And now all of the experience that I had working at HMV, my first, you know, job in the music industry, it's all coming back to me. I really understand, you know, what retail marketing is and how effective it is to, like, have your CDs at the entrance of the store, or have those retail stores, you know, put up posters. Also how they order stock, how you get stock to them, all sorts of things, and you know, the importance of like in-store performances and in-store, like, you know, when artists go in to do like signings with their fans, it's all, you know, come back and provided very useful to me. So it's kind of like come full circle in one way.
And that's the kind of thing where you don't always think about that first job that you had. Will it be of use to me again? But of course it is, because it's all knowledge. It's all, you've learned something, you know, whatever it happens to be, whether it's just how to operate in a work environment or whether it's the actual content of what you were doing. So that's brilliant. Carba, and the live and the label side, do they differ in terms of marketing?
Yes, I do think the live side of things and the label and recorded side of things does differ in marketing. I think understanding streaming is really key at the moment. That said, while they are different, I do think, yeah, as I mentioned, I do think for the right proactive candidate, you would pick up the two really quickly. If you understand marketing and you understand like very quickly how to distinguish different audiences, how to find ways of talking to them, I think you will be able to work in, you know, in the two sides of the business. But it would also take some proactivity in terms of learning about streaming, learning about live, like what works, what doesn't. I guess on the streaming side, like what are your options when it comes to marketing on streaming platforms, understanding, you know, when's the right time to release a single, how many singles in the lead up to an album, or, you know, all of those sorts of things you'd have to pick up and learn. And on the live side, you'd have to, you know, research and learn like the effects of, you know, how to work with a ticketing agent, what are the marketing options through them. But yeah, while they're different, I think I've been able to navigate them both in what I would say is like a short amount of time. So I think someone else who would want to try that out would, you know, would be able to.
So what's the biggest challenge then that you've faced to date, do you think?
So my biggest challenge is that I had to walk away from a role I'd worked really hard to get during a really uncertain time, leaving people I cared about, but I knew it was the right thing. I had to walk away from it because I wasn't happy and I had no passion there, and it was taking from my passion for music, and I walked away from it without a job to go to after having been, you know, unemployed for a while during the pandemic. So to be faced with being unemployed again was quite scary, but I'm really happy I did it. It was the right thing to do.
Yeah, and I think that's really an interesting point and a really important point. I think sometimes we just know that something is taking more than it is giving us, and in those situations where we can, we have to make a decision, and it's always a hard decision. And what do you wish you'd known when you started out, Karma?
I wish I knew that my career was not going to be linear and that was okay, because as you know, as you've heard from today, I've, you know, taken side steps, I've taken pay cuts, I've stepped down to get to closer to, I guess, my end goal, and that's fine. And also sometimes, like, if you're unemployed for a moment in time, that's also okay. If your career stops for a little bit, it's fine. It'll pick back up when you're ready or when the time is right.
Agreed, 100%. I think taking side steps, I don't know that linear careers necessarily exist in the way that they used to. So I would encourage anyone, really, sidesteps are good. And if you are, like you mentioned, Karma, if you have periods of unemployment, it's about what are you doing in that time? How are you upskilling? What are you trying to teach yourself? Like, I think that can be really important, because then that time becomes really valuable. You're doing something that you couldn't have done otherwise. So fantastic. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given, or what advice would you like to give your younger self, Karma?
Decide what you are willing to sacrifice and what you are not. And the reason that I think that's the best piece of advice I've been given is, again, because music is a passion for so many in the industry, for myself included. For a while, I just sacrificed everything for it. And actually, I should have thought about it a little bit more, and I should have decided, okay, what are the things I'm willing to sacrifice, and what are the things I'm not? I'm not willing to sacrifice time with my family. I'm not willing to sacrifice all my free time. I want my free time to do things like sports or, you know, other activities that don't include music, just so I have that break. So yeah, I think that's been really key to me.
Brilliant, important boundaries, really, really crucial. And what would you like to change in the music business? That feels like another massive question that I'm just dumping on you today, Karma. But is there anything you feel like you would like to change in the music business?
There's probably a lot of things that I'd want to change, and a lot of things that I'd keep the same way. But I would, you know, change the way that the industry is in terms of diversity. I want more diversity at all levels across many intersections, so gender, ethnicity, disability, and more. I think the work that UK Music Diversity Task Force are doing is so key and important, so that we can understand how we're doing as an industry when it comes to diversity. And then the other thing that I would change is, maybe not change, but encourage, is more protection and support for music industry workers. So we've got bodies that, you know, protect and represent artists, producers, venues, and, you know, it's really key. And I look to them, actually, because I wish that in the UK there was a more sort of like clear body that could represent music industry workers and protect us, so that we know when, you know, maybe our passion is being exploited, or so we know how to navigate, you know, difficult circumstances. Maybe more, what I would change, more unions.
More unions, bring back unions. Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Particularly when you're working for smaller companies, maybe who don't have HR in place, or policies, as many policies and processes. There's less transparency. There's not enough clarity. You know, all of that stuff is so, so important to ensure that the playing field is level and people are looked after. You know, that is really, really crucial. There's so much more, Karma, that I would love to talk to you about, and I feel like there might be a follow-up episode coming at some point, because I feel like we could have chatted for hours longer and put the world to rights about all of these things. There was so much more to talk about. Each episode, we'll be making a donation to a cause we care about on behalf of our guests. So tell us who you've picked and why, Karma.
I've picked a charity called Wild at Heart Foundation. It's very close to me because I'm an animal person, and the work that they do is set to sort of improve the lives of stray dogs, and also in a compassionate and passionate way, try and put an end to the amount of stray dogs there are in the world. They work with loads of local shelters in various countries across the world to support them in their sterilization practices, and also, you know, in some cases find homes for some of the dogs. So the way that I found my rescue dog Finn is through them, and yeah, I just love the work that they do, and I want to support them in any way possible.
Well, what a beautiful charity to be giving to. What a fabulous cause. Thank you so much, Karma. Again, I could have talked to you for hours. You're such a brilliant guest and a brilliant human being, and I am eternally grateful to have met you and to continue to know you. And I'm sure I'd love to get you back for another BIY pod episode if you're up for it in future. But thank you so much. It's been incredible to have you here today.
Thanks so much. It's been so great to be here, and thanks so much for listening to what I had to say and my stories, and yeah, indeed, just coming into my life and being such a great support, and yeah, hopefully friend as well.
Oh, yay, I love that, friend. You're a superstar. Thank you, Karma. So that's it for another episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget to rate and review if you like what you've heard, and give us 5 stars. If you don't bother. Like, subscribe and follow the BIY pod. And you can follow us on our socials as well. We're at biy.people.and.talent on Instagram and BIY People and Talent on LinkedIn. If you have any burning questions, you can email them to us at hello@biypeople.co.uk with BIY pod in the subject line. And finally, a big thank you to our super producer, Scarlett O'Malley, and the ever patient Emma Newburn for logistics support. This podcast was brought to you by BIY People and Talent to help you believe it yourself, build it yourself, and be it yourself.